This is Digital Story Podcast number 581, April 25th, 2017. Today's theme is Single Frame Story. I'm Derek Story. When you press the shutter button, what's your goal for that fraction of a second? Are you recording a slice of life? Capturing something beautiful? Not sure really why you took the picture in the first place. One exercise that I find useful is trying to tell a complete story within one frame. Everything the viewer needs to know right there within the boundaries of your viewfinder. And we explore this concept in today's TDS Photography Podcast. One of my favorite challenges in still photography is telling a complete story within one shot. And then that's when I go and I look at the video guides and I go, ha, you had all this footage, one shot tells the story. Boom, baby, right? Obviously, there are some instances where video is more appropriate. If we're at a wedding and the father gets up to give a speech, well, then I think video is the way to go, right? Because we want to hear what he has to say. But the still photographer can also capture many stories during the course of the event, all within one frame. And I think that's very exciting. And I think it's a good challenge and a good way to spice up your photography, especially if you feel like you're getting in a bit of a rut. Let's say that your thing is photographing sunsets. All right, so you photograph sunset, and you're showing people your beautiful sunset pictures. Well, after a while, trust me, they will get tired of sunsets. They will, because no matter how beautiful a sunset is, it's still a sunset. Now, when it's mixed in with other shots, that's different. That's different. What I'm saying is, though, if you go, well, you know what? My thing has been sunsets, but I really want to add a little bit more life to my photography. This is one of the ways to do it. Try to tell a story within one frame. It's very exciting, I have to tell you. Now, I'll publish a shot or two in the show notes that shows you what I'm talking about. But I'm going to give you, guess what, 5 points right now that will help you create an entire story within one frame. So let's get going on this. All right, first thing, look for action and reaction. Action and reaction. So this would be a two-person shot or one person with maybe a few other people, but one person is creating the action and then the others are reacting to it. Now in writing, we used to call this man versus man, and forgive the man thing, but that's just what we called it in literature for all those years. And there's variations on this technique, man versus nature, man versus himself or herself. And all of these situations, there is some sort of action. Let's say that the subject is holding clearly a valuable vase, and the vase has slipped out of their hands, and the vase is falling and is ready to crash on the floor, and they have this expression on their face, and you capture all of that. In this case, I guess this would be man versus himself, right? Because it's not really man versus vase. The vase isn't fighting him. The man just let go of it, right? Or slipped out of his hands. These are the sort of things, in my opinion, that you find and don't set up. Now, you can set them up, and I'm not against it. I don't think there's anything wrong with setting up action-reaction shot. In fact, they can be kind of fun and get a kick out of it. But generally speaking, I don't go to all that trouble to set them up. However, I have developed a good eye for seeing them out in life. And I'll tell you, one of the times that my action-reaction antenna go up is when I'm around kids, right? Because kids are fantastic with this sort of thing, especially toddlers. I love toddlers in this situation where they are exploring the world and something surprises them. And you capture whatever that something is, and you capture the toddler's expression. Now, if you really think about it, a lot of stuff that happens on YouTube is action and reaction, especially the humorous stuff. So action and reaction, something to keep an eye out for. And in this case, all you do is just watch it. Just watch it and be ready. Have the camera up to your face. Go into burst mode so that you can fire off a bunch of shots and so that you can capture that perfect reaction to something that happens. One of my favorite single frame stories is action and reaction. Next, once you get the shot, crop out extraneous elements. And I notice this really improves the impact of my image. And in fact, the one that I'm going to publish with the show notes, or one of the ones I'm going to publish with the show notes, was actually a bigger shot. It's the rock climbers. And you know, the woman is trying to get up this sheer face, and there's a guy up there, you know, coaching her on, you know, and also, you know, running the ropes for her. And that whole thing was pretty powerful. And then I cropped it and it got more powerful. And it's funny how a simple crop that really helps the viewer focus in on what's happening. Remember, we don't have a lot of time in terms of viewers' attention. And so we have a second or two to grab them. And now once we grab them, we can hang on to them for a few seconds. A lot of times cropping will help us grab onto them because they need to be able to identify something that's going on in the shot very quickly that's going to hold their attention. Cropping does that. Now, if you don't crop it and you have extraneous elements around, that can be very distracting and they literally can get lost in the woods, right? So remember to crop to tell the story. Have every square pixel in that shot be doing something, be carrying its weight, so that the storytelling is happening from corner to corner. Next, work with lighting, not against it. Lighting can really be your friend when you're trying to tell a story. Now, I'm not talking about something so obvious as, okay, let's say that you have a young man who is in a chapel and he's praying, and you just have a single shaft of light coming down on his face while he's praying and everything else is sort of darkened. All right, that's a little over the top, okay? But you get my point. You get my point to where you're using lighting to help illuminate what's important, what you want the viewer to engage with, and that is very helpful. Now, sometimes there's a little bit of luck involved with this, right? Especially if you're not setting up the shot, if you're waiting for it to happen. But the other thing that I've noticed is many times there is movement, especially on action reaction shots. And if you're paying attention to the lighting and to what the scene looks like, then maybe you can anticipate the action moving into the light or some sort of favorable circumstance. So keep an eye on lighting because it can really be your ally when you're trying to tell the story. You can help this by doing something called a vignette. So if you don't get exactly the lighting that you want and you need a little bit of help to draw the viewer's eye to maybe a brighter area of the image and maybe other areas are darkened a bit, vignetting can help you with that. Vignetting can help you when lighting naturally wasn't exactly what you wanted. So you set up the vignette so that the brightest area is on, you know, the subject or whatever you want the viewer to experience first. And then as the vignette trails off into darker tones, that is the secondary part of the shot. So look for lighting, try to use lighting to the best of your ability in the situation. But if you need a little help, our friend the vignette can really be useful there. Be on the lookout for drama and humor. Drama and humor. These are two of my favorite action and reaction sort of situations. Drama usually has a bit of tension. And when I mentioned the rock climber shot a little bit earlier, as I look at the woman who's trying to come up this sheer face, I don't know exactly, you know, what her state of mind is. On one hand, I feel like she's a little nervous, a little scared. On the other hand, she could be very determined. And then I look at the body language of the man that's up at the top of the rock who's helping her. And his body language is very much trying to encourage her to come up and help her come up. So we have drama there. We have dramatic tension. You know, is she going to make it up that rock? Is she going to be okay? Can he help her? That dramatic tension is terrific in one-frame stories. Now, on the other hand, humor is fantastic too. And humor is usually some sort of reaction that we don't expect, right? So we go to do something. We go to do something very simple, like, you know, open the door. We just go to open the door, and the door falls off the hinges, right? The door falls off, and then we have a reaction to that. And at first, we might be shocked, and then we smile and laugh. That is, unless it's our door. If it's our door, then we're going to be dismayed, because now we're looking at a repair. Someone else's door, it's really funny. Have you ever noticed how that works? If it happens to you, it's dramatic. If it happens to someone else, it's funny. Okay, but at any rate, drama and humor are two things to really keep an eye out for. They make one-frame storytelling so very easy, because there is so much energy in the shot as a result of the drama or the humor. So look for that. Think about that. Think about situations where there might be some drama that you can capture. And I don't mean drama where someone's going to get hurt, or a drama where you're intruding in someone's personal space when, you know, you should be leaving them alone. I'm not talking about that kind of drama. I'm talking more about the drama, as I was mentioning earlier, with the rock climber, where you're just there as this event's happening, and you're trying to capture it and frame it in a way where you get that tension of what's going on. We don't know when we look at the picture if she's going to succeed or not, but we want her to, and we're pulling for her. That is drama. So look for drama and humor. These are classical. These go all the way back to the earliest days of theater, and they work great in our still photography also. And then, speaking of drama, look for dramatic angles. And I really noticed this. Again, I'll go back to the rock climber shot. I'm going to try to stick with that shot because it's one that I'm going to show in the show notes. When I first shot that shot, I saw what was going on, and we've talked about this before on the podcast. When you first see something that looks like a good shot, shoot it. Shoot it right then, because you don't know how long that situation is going to last, and you don't want to miss the shot altogether. So that's what I did with the rock climber shot. I was a little bit off to the side. I saw this going on, and I took a picture. Well, actually, I took a few pictures. Then it looked like this was going to take a while to unfold. So I go, all right, great. So then I could change my position and look for a more dramatic angle. And this is something that we've learned watching movies. This is something that we've learned from other photographers, that the angle can really enhance the situation. Lighting and angle, these two things. So a low angle is dramatic. A high angle can be dramatic. Anything but, well, just plain old same straight on, which is the way so many pictures are taken, straight on at eye level, that tends not to be as dramatic. Now, if you have a very dramatic situation or a very funny situation going on, then it doesn't really make any difference, right? Because the intensity of the reaction is going to carry the shot. However, on a lot of other shots where you're actually doing some storytelling, where you actually have some time to do some storytelling, then maneuvering to get a dramatic angle, an angle that really enhances what's going on, that adds a lot to the shot. And as I look at the series of shots that I took, and I look at the early shot, which was fine, it was good, and if that's all I had, I probably would be, you know, relatively happy with it. But then when I see the shot with the more dramatic angle, which is later, that shot I love so much more exciting to me. It's the same interaction, it's the same drama, it's the same, everything else is the same, the lighting's the same. All I did was take four steps to the right so I could get a little better angle, and the whole shot changed. So if you have a chance, look for dramatic angle and a little drama in terms of how you frame the shot, in addition to the action and reaction, in addition to the lighting, in addition to things that you can do in post, such as vignetting. And you take all of this, you put all these ingredients in one pot, and you stir it a little bit, and you add a little heat, and then you come up with a single frame story. And I think single frame stories are something that if you set out to do them, and you practice them, and you set them up, and then you mix them in with those other shots that you normally do, I think you'll get some interesting reactions, because viewers love this type of shot. They really do. They really gravitate towards it. And if you think about it, a lot of what is powering social media now is this type of shot, a single frame story that people can look at the shot and they go, wow, that's cool, or ooh, that's sad, or that's interesting, or other things. And there's other things too. This type of photography, I think, is very exciting, and I think the folks that you show pictures to will appreciate these types of shots, and I really hope you give it a try. Perfect panoramas with your smartphone. So this is this week's installment of Adventures with the Mifoto Road Trip Air, and this is one that I really like, and I'm going to actually walk you through the steps on this. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about using your smartphone, and you can use a regular camera also, but the panorama mode on smartphones is so good. I'm going to be walking you through the steps with my iPhone, but this would work with an Android phone also. The panorama mode is so good, and you have those images ready right away. They're processed instantly. It's a very satisfying thing. Now, here's the thing about panorama shots. The phone is smart. And so if you're not perfectly straight as you're panning, let's say, from left to right, it's going to put together a pretty good panorama for you, but you're going to lose image information. If you compare a handheld panorama to one that is done with a tripod where the phone is squared up or the camera is squared up, you will notice a difference. And the one on the tripod is going to look a lot better. And they're so easy to do. And you've got to try this. If you haven't tried it on a tripod, you really need to do it, especially if you like panoramas. Now, the Mifoto Road Trip Air has everything that you need. First of all, it has a panning function. So even though it's a ball head, so the top knob, the larger knob is for the ball head, and that's great. Ball head, you can make adjustments really quick. And you're going to use the ball head to square up your phone, and we'll talk about that in a second. But it also has a second knob, a smaller knob beneath the ball head, and that is to control the panning. So you can lock the panning, or you can loosen it a bit so there's a little bit of tension while you pan, or you can loosen it all the way and just, you know, turn the thing freely from side to side, from left to right or right to left. Having this panning knob is really good, because if you have to pan with just a ball head, it's very difficult. You can't keep it squared up. So this tripod, even though it's a compact tripod, even though it's an affordable tripod, this feature that it has is very nice for both filmmaking and panoramas. In addition to that, it also comes with the mount for your smartphone, and it's right there in the pouch. It's a spring mount. So you have everything you need to do a really nice panorama. So here's how we do it. First thing that you need to do is mount the smartphone on the tripod, and if it's an iPhone especially, you want it vertically, right? Because that's the way iPhones capture panoramas, vertically, up and down. So you take the ball head and you move it all the way over to the side. There's a slot to do that. You use the little bracket that comes in the pouch. You mount your smartphone so that it's straight up and down. In the beginning, you can just eyeball this. You don't have to spend a lot of time doing this. Just eyeball it, because the second step is then you enable the Compass app on the iPhone. And you're going, the Compass app? Why the Compass app? Well, because the second screen on the Compass app, if you swipe, you get the compass on the first screen, but if you swipe, I think you swipe to the left, then you get a level. You get an electronic level. Yes, it's built right into your smartphone. Now, there is a bubble level on the Mifoto, but it won't work when you have your iPhone in this position. It doesn't make any difference, because you've got the electronic level built into your iPhone. So swipe to that second screen, and then zero out. Get everything nice and straight. That electronic level, if you haven't used it, is really terrific. And then what I do is, once I get everything squared up so it's reading zero, then I just swing the phone using the panning motion of the tripod left to right, and I watch the level to make sure that it stays within a degree or so. If it stays within a degree, either plus or minus, you're going to be fine for your panorama. If it starts to vary too much, then I would move to one of the other positions and level and just play with it for a second until you get a nice even panning from left to right where it stays within a degree plus or minus either way. So this built-in level that's in the Compass app will really help you square everything up on the phone. Okay, Now, once you have everything squared up, and this only takes a second. I know I'm talking on and on about it, but it only takes a second to do. Now you go to the camera app, and then you go to panorama mode. And then I usually go from left to right. I like to go from left to right. So I'll frame the shot starting on the furthermost left side. And then I'll go ahead and tap the shutter button. And it starts recording. Now all I have to do is just swing the iPhone because it's not going to move around, right? It's only going to pan from left to right. So you have the panning knob slightly loosened. The ball head is locked down nice and tight because you squared it up with the electronic level. And then you just pan slowly from left to right. And you don't have to worry about going a precise speed or anything, as long as you don't go too fast. And I noticed if I went a little unevenly, the phone is smart. It's just recording information as I go. Now, I do try to go as smoothly as possible from left to right. But I've noticed that if there's a little variance in my speed, it doesn't seem to make a problem at all in the final shot. Once I get all the way to the right end of the shot, then you just tap the shutter button again, and it puts the panorama together for you virtually instantly. And then you look at this thing, and it is beautiful. It's all squared up. You don't lose any image information at all because you were, going up and down while you're recording the shot. And they look absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So the Mi Photo Air is the compact tripod that I've been talking about. If you want to learn more about it, I have additional information in the show notes. Go to the Mi Photo site. We have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Just click on that tile, take you over there. And if you decide that you want one that can do all these great things that I've been talking about over the last few weeks, then make sure you use coupon code THEDIGITALSTORY, and that will get you 10% off and you'll receive free shipping. Why printing your photos will make you a better photographer. And this is a piece I'm going to be reading from, a piece that published in Petapixel. And of course, I have the link in the show notes. But I really liked this piece a lot, and I thought it made some good points. So you can read the text, and then there's also a video that goes with it. I'm going to read you some of the text right now. And there are two main points that this article brings up as to the advantages that you receive as a photographer by occasionally printing your work. Oh, by the way, the photographer that's quoted in this article, his name is Peter McKinnon. And so a lot of these words are Peter's or the author of the article. Photography, he says, that would be Peter, used to be a two-part process. Part one, take pictures. Part two, develop and print them. With the advent of digital photography, that second part warped into post-processing and online sharing. But McKinnon believes that something was lost in the translation. Quote, "Where I love Instagram, and I love digital, and I love where everything's gone," says McKinnon, "it got me thinking, people don't print their work enough, and there are so many benefits that come from printing your stuff out." The two benefits that McKinnon touches on in this video are, one, printing helps you understand your photography much better, and two, printing your photos lets you rediscover that second half of the photographic process. Both of these things help you to improve your own photo taking and, as a bonus, draw more joy out of your photography. And I think he's spot on there. Now, I'm going to elaborate just a little bit on both points. Okay, so the first point, printing helps you understand your photography much better. And you're going, well, how does that happen? It's interesting. I've talked about this before, but it's been a while. So you may not have heard this. When you make a print, let's say that you make a nice 13 by 19 inch print of an image that you really like, because we usually only print stuff that we like, right? Now, you have looked at this image on the computer screen during image editing, during sorting, during all the things. So you're obviously familiar with the shot. But once you print it out, and once you have it laying around the studio or the workroom or the house, or even if you decide to put it up on the wall, you are engaging with that image in a much different way and for a much longer period of time and over again. In other words, you're not opening up your computer every day and then staring at that image for 5 minutes. You're not going to do that. You've moved on. That's the way computers are. That's the way online life is. You've already worked on that shot. You've posted it. you're on to the next thing. However, if you have a print of it laying around, you're going to walk past it, you're going to look at it, it's going to be on the wall, you're going to be sitting on the couch thinking about something, your eyes are going to raise up, you're going to see it on the wall, you're going to think about it again, and this is going to happen over and over and over again for as long as you have that image around. Now, I have images on the wall that have been up there for more than a year, and I am still discovering things about them. And that is really neat. And then sometimes after you've had that print around for a while and you've really got to know it, then you go, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to darken this area a bit, or I'm going to lighten this area a bit, or I'm going to pull down the saturation a bit here. You're going to make adjustments that I don't think you would have made had you not printed it out and been living with the image. So I think it really does help you understand your photography on a much deeper level. Second, and this is an interesting point, I hadn't really thought about this until Peter brought it up, how printing lets you rediscover that second half of the photographic process. And I was thinking, how wonderful is that? Because before, when we had to make a print, it was in a chemical darkroom, and it was really a big deal. You had to mix the chemicals, you had to have the facility, you had to have the equipment, you had to have the time, it was slow. I'm not complaining about any of this, but it was really something that required some dedication. Let me put it that way. Now, however, you can still get all the benefits of printing, but in a much more convenient way, because now you can connect your computer to a printer, either with a cable or via Wi-Fi, however you do it, and you are still printing. You are still setting up the print job. You are still watching the thing emerge from the printer. You are still engaging in that physical second half of the process. And then when the image comes out and you first look at it, you're either excited or you're a little disappointed or you're a little bit of each. And then maybe you go back and you fine-tune a few things and then you make another print. But you can't do this instantly. You can't do this instantly. There's a certain amount of time that's involved where you are focused on that image and where suddenly you are immersed in it in a way that you weren't when you were just looking at it on your computer screen. And I think that is fascinating too. I would say that this is an easy way, using high quality inkjet printers, this is an easy way to re-engage in that second part of the process to get that satisfaction without all the fuss and muss that we had to do before with a chemical darkroom. If what I'm talking about resonates with you at all, I encourage you to go over and take a look at it. Click on the link in the show notes. Make a few prints and think about what I'm talking about as you're engaged in the printing process. Take a Saturday morning. Take a Saturday morning where you go, you know what, I don't feel like going out today. Kind of want to hang around the house. Coffee's tasting really good. I'm going to make a couple prints and immerse in my photography that way. That is time well spent. That is something that you can do to become a better photographer, and you never have to walk out the front door. Give it a try and see what you think. It gets me excited, as you can tell, just thinking about it. And I'm in the middle of working on a creative printing ebook right now, and so I'm living this dream. It was a great excuse for me to make more prints than I normally make in a week. So anyway, that's called Why Printing Your Photos Makes You a Better Photographer. Yeah, I think it does. As I mentioned last week, registration invitations have gone out to our reserve list members for the Autumn in Wine Country Photography Workshop. So I had a few people where theirs got lost or I screwed up and didn't get it to them or whatever. And they wrote me and said, hey, can you send me the stuff? And I did. If you fall into that category, write me, say, I didn't get it, I was on the reserve list, and then I'll get it to you right away. Now, I'm going to tell you one other thing about this. So one of the things that I was doing yesterday, Sunday, and I know this is going to draw a lot of sympathy from you, but I was out scouting, and where I was yesterday, if their events person, because I want us to have a behind-the-scenes thing. I don't want to be just, you know, walking up to the wine bar like everyone else. I want a bit more than that. So while I'm there making sure that this is the kind of place that I want to bring you to, then I also get the card of the events person, and then I work with them and see what we can work out. So I haven't called yet because it's Monday, and I hate calling events people on Monday. They've got enough going on right now, but I'm going to call them tomorrow. If this place works out, it's going to be killer. It's going to be... I mean, my inclination is going to be to stop right here because... So I'm really working hard for you. I guess this is the real message. I'm really working hard for you to make sure I get just the right places and the best wine and great food to go with it. All for you, okay? I'm thinking about you the whole time. Anyway, if you want to learn more about this workshop, you can go to the workshops page and check it out there. And then if you go, wow, this is something that I might be interested in, go ahead and use the send me info, and I'll get you on the second wave of the reserve list. It's coming up this October, late October. The research pushes on until then. Also, I want to give a big thanks to all of our Patreon members, new ones and existing ones both. And right now, I really want to tip my hat to those that signed up when we first started this, which was, August or so, I believe, is when we started Patreon last year, and who have continued to support the site all the way through. Tip of the hat to you guys. Thank you for becoming a member of our inner circle and then continuing your support. I'm going to do my best to hold up my end, and I really appreciate you doing your best to help keep the lights on here. And finally, I've got to mention Red River Paper today because you notice I stayed away from it when I was talking about it in the earlier spot on printing, but you know I was thinking about them the whole time. This is exactly the kind of stuff that they're going, yes, we've been saying that all along. Printing will make you a better photographer, and we can help you with that. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And if you want to get motivated about printing and you go, you know what, I'm not even sure what I want to print on. They have sample packs. They have sample packs where you can get 5 or 6 different sheets of paper all in one pack. It's very affordable. They'll get it out to you right away. And you can say, hey, I'll try this surface, I'll try that surface. And you'll find something, believe me, that you'll fall in love with. Red River Paper, longest running supporter of the digital story. Tile on all the pages of the digital story. Go there, go to our landing page. They have a special offer, and they will take good care of you, I promise. Until we meet again next week, have a great week. I got more stuff to talk about, and we'll move on from there. All right, bye-bye now.